From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
Welcome back to Postcard from Poprad, part two, boys and girls, of your alternative sideways look at the news with me, Eric Wiltshire, at the base of the Tatry Mountains here in Poprad in eastern Slovakia, Lee Banks over in the UK, Mark Gander in Paris, and I'm sure Mark will have something to say on the first topic in part two. Banks, say sorry.
They're right.
Well, I mean, they say sorry so often, quite frankly. I mean, it just loses any effect, doesn't it?
It does a
and,
bit.
And Barclays, you know, saying sorry again.
Sorry, what was that name again, Mark?
Barclays. The sorry old Barclays. Actually, I mean, the wretched Barclays with their bonuses and so forth. You know, how extraordinary. There was a BBC Two documentary about Barclays about 4 years ago. And in that, the BBC journalists found, and this is the quote, they found that Barclays had a culture of dishonesty about them. And here we get, once again, Barclays managing to, it seems, go for a lot of mis-selling, all sorts of investment products to of course, older people.
And that, actually, that's a key phrase, Mark, because they did admit it was mis-selling, didn't they?
They did admit it was mis-selling, and not only that, they think they've handled it very badly. They realised it was going on and failed to take any action. I think that it went on for maybe almost 2 years before some action was taken. And finally, the FSA decided to get involved. Well, that's unusual enough, because the FSA, generally speaking, likes to sort of keep things under wraps, I think.
Yeah.
And finally, I think, inflicted a fine of about £8 or £9 million.
Well, no, hang on, I'll correct you. It's £7.7 million.
£7.7 million on Barclays,
but
which somebody told me is roughly speaking equivalent to the bonus and the pay that Diamond is getting, their CEO.
Funny that,
you know.
But it's going to cost Barclays something like £60 million overall, isn't it?
Well, I don't see why you say it's going to cost them. I mean, there's £60 million to return the money.
Bad choice of words. I'll accept that.
So it's actually not costing them anything at all. And although they're going to be repaying the money with some level of interest, I can tell you that the level of interest they will be paying back will be about 8%, okay, because that's the normal rate of interest that's awarded for mistakes against banks. But in fact, while they've had that £60 million, they've lent it out at very, very high levels, typically 15% to 20%. You know what your overdraft costs, you know what you're paying for those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think you'll find at the end of the day that the amount of interest that's been made over these years will very easily pay the fine and a little bit more for bonuses. It's not nasty enough, and the banks need something to shock them up so badly that they really stop it.
And
this action against Barclays is not it.
And of course, it comes in the same week, which kind of like flattens it out a bit with the, I won't say necessarily anger, because I'm going to throw a complete googly into this one, whereby Goldman Sachs, which actually didn't make a huge amount of money in the back end of last year, is still going to pay out $9.6 billion in pay and bonuses from last year. Reckon, you know, they've got this huge money that's going out to these people, and like it or not, Goldman Sachs actually did make a profit in which for them would have probably been the worst year they were ever going to come up against, because they had to write off so much toxic debt. But there's still these huge bonuses equaled out. Now, this is an average figure, boys and girls, and it doesn't mean to say the guy that sweeps up in the hallway is going to get the same money as the CEO, because it's not going to happen like that. But averaged across their 35,000 staff, it equals £270,000 bonuses going out. The problem I've got with this one is banking is, like it or not, a very difficult area to work in as a high-flying individual. Get it wrong and you get into the sort of states of the films that we've seen and the books we've read about bankers making bad investments, costing billions and taking banks down the toilet. Therefore, to get the right people, you may well have to pay significant amounts of money. And it's rather like saying, well, you know, how much do I pay for a brain surgeon? Is he worth 200 grand a year, or should I pay him £40,000 a year, and will he be equally as interested? And I think we've got to do some balance on this, otherwise the whole thing's going to get out of sync.
Well, Eric, you're
right. The simple fact is it's just a matter of success and failure, and these people have failed, so why should they be rewarded for failure?
Exactly right. And I mean, Eric, you know, you've just made the point that, you know, we've got to, or people have got to be paid sufficient money to make sure we've got the right people. Well, yes. You know, over the past few years, they've been paid their money. And have they got the right people? Well, look at the world
economy.
Yes, absolutely exactly. Not. So clearly, paying the right amount of money is not the thing that secures your economy. And all it does is it produces profitable banks. But profitable banks simply means banks which pay a lot of money to their shareholders and a lot of money to the people who work for them. But in terms
of
actually serving the community,
aren't they? Of course they
are.
So these people at the banks are entrepreneurs, and they're there to make money for themselves.
Okay, so let's just take that point that you've quite rightly brought up, Mark, and quite rightly brought up. There are some banks, like it or no, that probably don't get the headlines that others do, who have not borrowed money from anybody, have survived, have made profits, and continue to give customer service. Tend to be the smaller ones, I must agree, but they are still out there. So my question is this. If there is a good side to banking, which there clearly is, and there's a really unacceptable side of banking, which there very clearly is, why don't people march with their feet? Move the account. If you've got a bank account, why don't you go and have a look? This is my tip. Have a look at the bank account that you've got now. Look at what the bank's doing, paying out with your money. And then look at other alternatives. And to be honest, don't just sit and go, oh, well, I can't be bothered to change it because I'll have to change my card and my PIN number and blah, 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 blah. If people got up and moved their accounts around to people that did bank sensibly during the last horror that came out, it would probably make a little bit of a difference. But it's not just one person that's got to do it. Lots of people have got to do it. And that's the minute right, they do it, banks are going to go, ooh. We've lost 1,000 customers. 1,000 customers makes a difference. One doesn't. It's got to be
en masse. The trouble is nobody knows where to go. And from a personal point of view, in other words, the personal product, the money, the one that you're paying for every month for your card or your overdraft charges or what have you, they're probably all the same. I mean, to drop a name, I suppose that the new Metro Bank seems to be sort of quite different for personal customers. But, of course, there's so few branches around. It's not a national option, and it certainly...
But we don't need so many branches these days, because most everybody's banking online and doing credit card transfers to pay for things. You don't need to physically go to a bank and sit there and cringe when the bank manager comes out like you did years ago, because there's no necessity to do that in the modern world. So look at the ethical banks, and where possible, change your bloody account there.
Well, I think they all try to say they're ethical, but I mean, look at the Co-op. The Co-op is the first bank which in 1974 started introducing unarranged overdraft charges. Mm. They are actually responsible for it all, believe it or not, because everybody thought it was such a good money-making idea that everybody else jumped on the bandwagon. They are meant to be the ethical bank. But, you know, are we talking about ethics in terms of that they won't invest in Southern Rhodesia or South Africa during apartheid, or are we talking about ethics about the way they treat their poor and vulnerable customers?
I think
customers?
You can do both, Mark. And I think it's worth people, you know, someone's got to start this somewhere. And whilst we're debating it, other people are listening. And this is my absolute advice, and you can argue with me if you like. Do some you've all got a bit of spare time, chaps. Look at where people bank, because it's now very difficult for banks to hide it. Number two, look at the bonuses and the profits and how much money they've had to borrow from governments to stay in business. And ask yourself, well, hang on a minute. If they're borrowing money from a government that I'm paying into, I'm the owner. At that point, look at the banks that are not taking money from the governments.
Yeah. Look unfortunately, Barclays is one that actually didn't take any government money in the end, I have to say.
Sure.
That does not actually give it as a seal of approval, because look at the way it's behaving now.
I quite agree, but you can then add in the mis-selling of some banks. And that comes into as a factor as well. And tick a few boxes, like you'd go when you buy a car. Tick a few boxes, yes, 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 no, 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 no. Add it all up and look and go, hang on a minute. And you pick the phone up, and in today's world, because there is competitiveness with banks, you pick up the phone and you talk to a different banker. Look, I'm with Mark's bank, and I'm not happy with that. I've spoke to Lee's bank, I'm not happy with that. I'm speaking to you, Eric's bank. Now, what can you do and assure me and take them through it and challenge them over it and then make your decision. If nobody does it, we'll all sit there like there's so many people have had accounts with banks for 25 and 30 years, and they just sit there and take it. You don't have to take it. Silence.
Well, listen, I mean, you know, you're absolutely right, but turning that into such a tide that it actually bothers the banks, I don't see how it can be done.
People start to do it, someone's got to start somewhere.
What
you're talking about is being proactive. We in Britain now have petrol at £7 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Central heating oil's gone up by 48%. Food has gone up by 18%. We've been hit in the three places. We are almost like a failing nation now. We've been hit in housing, transport, and food. Those are three main areas. That's what we need to say.
Don't start me on the construction.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying is that banks are responsible for this, and nobody cares. And what we need to do is be proactive about it. And what you're saying, Eric, is fine. You can't have a defeatist attitude, Mark, like you're talking about.
No.
You know, say that there's nothing you can do. You've got to stand up for yourself and be counted. I have a situation around here where I'm campaigning for something. To try and get people to stand up and be counted instead of just standing there and shrugging the shoulders and saying there's nothing we can do about it.
I shrug my shoulders in terms of sort of saying, you know, switch and ditch, ditch your bank and then switch to another one. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a great idea, but who to recommend, I really don't know, and I don't know how to get the tidal wave going. And from that,
I agree with you. I understand that.
Yeah, I understand.
In terms of not standing up for yourself, believe me, I mean, the reason that I run the Consumer Action Group and the reason I started it is exactly to help people. And you know, at the moment, because there are no alternatives, because there's no competition, the only way that I can see the standing up for yourself is to go straight in headfirst and challenge your own bank.
Yeah.
Don't switch. Challenge them and make life so difficult for them and be such a problematic customer that maybe they'll start to listen. And actually, I do think at the moment that's the only way.
You want a t-shirt? There you go. Here's the logo for your t-shirt. Your t-shirt says, I want some service from my bank.
Now,
I would like to say, very simply, again, last year, I went overdrawn on my current account by, I can't remember exactly, but it was like a fiver.
Mm.
Nobody bothered to tell me from the bank, and I don't check my bank statements. And by the time I checked it, I had overdraft charges and all sorts of charges of just under £500. So I phoned the customer services people, told them, and they said basically there's nothing you can do about it. Those are the rules. I went and see my bank manager, just like Mark was saying, and had them, which is a very strange thing now, that a bank manager had the power to get rid of these charges for me, but they did.
Yeah, funny that. Yeah. I think the t-shirt rules. I'm going to write one up. I'm going to make one. I want some service from my bank now.
Yes.
And we'll give you a free template for it as well. Moving back to China again, how made in China will save the world, or how made for China may well do the trick. Because at the moment, the Chinese are out all over the place. Eurozone authorities rolling out red carpets for Beijing, going down to Spain.
Very suitable colour as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And buying off really big debt problems for countries.
Well, they're buying the debt up. They're buying up the European debt, aren't they?
Well, exactly.
And that's a good thing, because the one thing is, like, everybody who, you know, has studied this realises that they've been buying up American debt for ages.
Yeah.
And the simple fact is, they've never, ever hurt the American system.
No.
And they won't. They've said they'll never hurt Europe.
No.
And that is probably the stability that we need. That's going back, like we said, going back to what we were talking about before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And a comment that we came across was that now, instead of just made in China, and I put the comment at the top myself, that when you should have a ticket made for China. And if people would embrace that, right, I have to say, like Germany, who've done tremendously well with export deals to Beijing, as the First Minister up in Scotland was saying a couple of weeks ago, that he was very proud of the fact that the Chinese had done this amazing deal to sell proper original Scottish whiskey to China and get an assurance that nobody would copy it or try to copy it or pirate it. You know, this is an amazing opportunity for people if they just jump on it, forget about the old days, let's move on, it's 2011, and actually look at ways you can work with an economy like China. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if by doing that, you could actually hasten the debt problems to be eradicated and start trading with each other. What a wonderful thing to do.
Well, that's right. Of course it is. And that's the way I really believe that we should be looking at this now. You know, we have not done very well. There is really no other way to look at it. We haven't done very well financially. But China has. Now, why wouldn't you go with somebody who's doing it right and has been working ethically and with an idea of protecting other people and economies? At this moment, it doesn't appear that they have this gung-ho, rabid attack attitude that we do. Witness the amount we're paying to the bankers, grabbing money, of destroying things and just taking profit out of it. Mm-hmm. There is an ethical way of doing business, like Mark said before, and possibly, quite just possibly, this could be it.
Okay, moving along, Lee's already mentioned that petrol is, or gas or benzene, is due to hit £7 a gallon, which is just over, it's about 5 litres, isn't it?
Well, in some places it has actually made it. In Eccleshill, which is just down the road from me, which is a beautiful little market town, quite well off, we have the £7 gallon.
Mm. What's petrol like in France, Mark?
Well, I don't own a car. I rent one about...
Very good taste, any better.
Yeah, go on.
I think it's a bit cheaper than it is in the UK. And in fact, unusually for UK anyway, I think diesel in France is still cheaper because that was the big promise originally, wasn't it? Diesel was going to be the cheap one and everybody went out and bought diesel motor cars and the next thing they knew was diesel was being put up to above petrol.
Mm. That's right. Yes. I was a victim of that. I went out and bought a Hilux Surf diesel.
Oh dear.
As soon as I got it, diesel overtook petrol. Yeah. But it's like we said before, it's not only to do with petrol, is it? It's heating oil that's up 48%.
Yeah.
Petrol is actually up at this moment 13%. Mm-hmm. So add that onto your 48%, then cooking oil is 11% more expensive. Look, that's my phone. I wonder if it's
yeah, stop it. There. Anyway, staying with France for a minute, because the European Space Agency is down there, and Director General Jean-Jacques Dardin. Thank you.
Dardin.
Let's get the pronunciation right. They're celebrating the fact there's going to be a huge amount of rocket launches this week from French Guiana at the spaceport, which is an absolutely wonderful place to have a look at, which is Ariane 5, which has been going for donkey's years now, along with the Russian Soyuz vehicle, where they're actually working together to get the satellites launched. And Lee's made comment that although 2011 is the year for rockets for Europe, he reckons that, have you ever noticed when there's a space race, the world goes into meltdown? Now, I have to say...
I think it's the other way around. It's when the world goes into meltdown, we have a space race. Yeah. Well, look back at the 60s, what an incredible time that was.
Well, that wasn't a space race. No, that was not ESA at all, the European Space Agency. What they're doing this year is there's so many...
It was America no. and Russia in a space race to get to the moon.
I'll have to do this quickly as we get... run out of time again. The fact is that we have so many communication satellites up there. There's also going to be next year in 2012 a whole new network of satellites launched specifically for the internet. And they vary at different places up and down the orbits outside the world. The ones where you watch your normal television from are in what's called geostationary orbit, so they're a long way out, 26,000 kilometres. But there's other ones in low Earth orbit which you use for your GPS systems, for all sorts of telecommunication systems, and there are thousands of satellites up there. And as it's grown, of course, it means that they've got to be replaced, because the satellites don't last 20 years, chaps. 15 years...
They'll bring them down, though, do they?
Well, no, there's two rules to it. There's actually a new system being set up at the moment where they're going to send another kind of satellite up to actually refuel older satellites, which they can do. But the rest of them, there's a law, an international agreement where at the point where a satellite is getting to the end of its time, they have to keep so much fuel on board, so they fire it off out into outer space.
At £7 a gallon.
Yeah, which is a lot of money. Otherwise, by today, the entire orbit of the world will be completely clogged up with satellites. So they do have international agreement where, at the appropriate time, and don't ask me what it is because I can't remember, but they have to keep so much fuel on board so that they can fire the rocket, or fire the satellite off into outer space so that it doesn't actually burn up and come down and wreck other satellites. So there's a whole big industry in this. And, you know, even as we're talking now on this program, certain aspects of what we're using could well be going via a satellite link. We don't know. So it's a phenomenal...
Quite fascinating, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal thing. And when you see these amazing vehicles that the Russian Soyuz and the Ariane 5 take off, they are the most amazing things. And you think they go up there. Yeah. And once they're up there, now I accept there's a heck of a lot of fuel burn, but when they get up there, they're basically solar-powered. Very eco-friendly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very eco-friendly, and a lot more eco-friendly than 500 kilowatts of shortwave going in the old days, which is never such a bad thing. Wiki something this way. It's a UFO. What?
It's just interesting because actually what you were just saying about the satellites and everything, and the fact that we fire them off into outer space, but we all deride and deny and scoff at UFOs. Mm. Why isn't it on some other planet, somewhere else, or in another galaxy or another universe, that they're firing their satellites off, and that's what our UFOs are? But the fact that I really wanted to make was this WikiLeaks thing, which maybe actually just does add some credibility to the UFO story. There is a cable that America has banned from WikiLeaks, have managed to stop them WikiLeaks putting out, that says very simply, it's critical all embassy staff understand that they are not to discuss under any circumstances concerns about UFOs entering orbit. Once again, the seriousness of this matter cannot be overstated.
Yeah, because somebody will jump on the
bandwagon.
Somebody will just jump on the bandwagon, then it's because everything gets blown up out of all proportion.
Well, how's that blown up out of all proportion? That's a cable. That's a little cable of what? 48 words, and that's blown up out of proportion. That's
I think it could well be.
Why has WikiLeaks declined to upload it onto their website?
Because they've basically been told not to.
And Julian Assange, you trying to get some brownie points for the US government?
I think quite feasibly that's what it's about. But there again, you have the theme, my theme of the show, which has been, there again, more freedom of speech is just
here we go.
And over something as bizarre as UFOs.
Funny that. A woman in the US is able to speak for the first time in 11 years after some amazing surgery. And I saw this story. It's a bit gory if you watch the videos, but it is absolutely fantabby-dozy. Brenda Jensen said the operation, which took place in California, was a miracle and has restored her life. She had an operation some years back.
Hang on. Either it was an operation or it was a miracle. I mean, it just can't
both.
Be both.
I think it can. Really. We can be... What's the journalistic word for this? We can have some poetic...
Miracle operation.
We can have some poetic license here. Miracle operation. Thank you very much. She had an operation several years... Many years ago, 1999. And that damaged her... if we just use the generic term of throat for a moment, because I'm not going to go into the gory details. And so she couldn't talk. She had to have one of those pipes in her throat to breathe through. Basically, her life was terribly wrecked. But this pioneering surgery took place in the US. So congratulations to Professor Martin Birchall as well. And they took this from a donor. The interesting thing for me is when she starts talking, she's actually talking with her sound, not the donor sound, which is amazing to think how the body can recover like that, isn't it?
I thought that was quite incredible. Yeah, she's actually recovered her own voice, hasn't she?
Yeah, but it's the size of her thorax and everything that's going to produce that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's
but,
like the size of a bottle with water. I mean, it's not is it the mouth of the bottle? Anyway,
well, it gets all a bit confused. But the poor lady had to live with one of those electronic voice boxes for years, which doesn't sound very good. But she's now back talking, and just an amazing thing, and that's modern science, modern technology doing wonderful things, and really absolutely brilliant. Very quickly, the university discovers why Neanderthals had big noses. Lee?
I just thought it'd be helpful to you, Eric.
Why?
To discover why Neanderthals had big noses.
But I haven't got a big nose.
And you're not a Neanderthal. I would never have suggested you were a big-nosed Neanderthal.
Oh, I know why you've done this.
Why?
Because it's paid-for research.
Well, yeah, exactly. Oh. Why do we need to know this?
I don't need to know! I don't care!
But, ladies and gentlemen, we do need to know that if you go and have a look at the videos of mine and Eric's trip round Poprad...
I knew that was coming.
You'll see his Neanderthal nose.
Fabulous.
There is a point where the camera focuses on his nose. And the thing is, he was holding the camera.
Okay. We've got one more subject, so let's have a silly one to finish off with this week, boys and girls. If you don't know who Jedward are, they are the most untalented couple that have ever been on British television. And they became famous on one of Simon Cowell's programmes. And they're the butt of all jokes. Anyway, the two brothers that form Jedward, which is John and Edward, this is how they get Jedward, right? Reportedly, have been slapped with a £6,000 tax duty bill after they decided to buy some memorabilia of Michael Jackson's.
Yeah.
So, like, why do I care?
Well, I don't care either, really.
Why the hell are we doing the story then?
Yeah, exactly. God, couldn't agree. Let's do the woman who in a fur coat and a knickers.
We haven't got time for that one. One interesting story.
Well, hang on a minute. A woman who keeps a stolen fur coat inside a knickers for 3 days while she's in jail. I mean, I'm just wondering about the state of this fur coat.
Yeah.
I find that whole thing absolutely disgusting.
Oh, dear. It puts a whole new meaning to the phrase fur coat and no knickers, doesn't it?
Well, it does rather. And apparently this all took place in Boomington. Boomington.
Boomington.
You got it.
Thing is, she tried to deny it. She tried to deny the fact that
what did she say it was then when they saw this fur curling out from up
there? Well, it certainly wasn't a Brazilian, was it?
Not on the air.
No. But
as the authorities patted her down.
Yeah, right.
Is this a family show, Eddie?
Yeah, I think so. Very quickly, a bit of news. If you're going to get arrested in Russia, it's not a problem anymore because they're going to give Russian prisoners the opportunity to have tanning beds in the prison.
Yeah, but they're going to charge him 10 rubles a minute.
Well, that's all right, then. That was Postcard from Poprad. if it is your birthday this week, do have a look on the Facebook page, Radio Tatchers International News, and you'll see your picture there. Thanks very much indeed for your company. Goodbye, girls.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.